coming in as Loom. Go with Ike Sider. That scores! Danny McDonald!
And over at that Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can't put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby!
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, happy Friday. Let's get things going on this Friday, August 23rd. Another hour of Flames Talk is underway. Our final hour before our final hiatus of the summer. Welcome to it. Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson, and welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Save 40% on a Halo Smart Lock and start unlocking your house right from your phone. Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com. Happy Friday, Mr. Gilbertson.
Thank you, buddy. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. I'm doing very well. And it is it's good to be doing an hour of Flames Talk on this Friday. We're off next week.
Yeah.
Back after Labor Day. And then we're right into season mode.
It's about to wind right up, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah.
It truly is.
Yeah, I'm going through my annual, like, panic. I got to get a few rounds of golf in, you know, in case I haven't played a few already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm also good. It's a different type of panic.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, it's definitely like, okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's coming right around the corner.
Yeah. And because this is our final hour for about a week, thought, you know what? Good way to wrap up the summer. This is kind of the final show of the summer, final hour of the summer. And then we're into the 24-25 season the next time we talk to you. I think it's a good time to do a mailbag.
I love it.
It's a good time to dive in. We already got tons of questions on the text line at 960-960. Flames Talk mailbag.
I got to give it to the text line because they do not take the hiatus.
No.
Yesterday we wanted some hot takes. They delivered. Today we need some mailbag questions. Here they come.
There are
we appreciate it.
There are Bucky Barnes with us till the end. I like it. That one right over your head.
Yeah, you lost me there, buddy. Who's Bucky Barnes?
Superhero stuff.
Ah.
Winter Soldier. You know.
Yeah.
Marvel stuff.
Yeah.
960-960 on the text line. Get your questions in. Put your name on the text so that we can put a name to the question. We'll get to as many as we can. You want to talk trades. You want to talk extensions. You want to talk just signings, offer sheets, young players, line combinations. It is all there on the table for you at 960-960. So this one starts. Kenny, listening up in Fort Mac, is going to kick us off. Says, gents, I'm curious if the Flames should maybe look at some RFA offer sheets this summer and next. So he says, I'm all right if players with tenure decide to move on from a team, but players who do Adam Fox or Rutger McGroarty and Cutter Gauthier should not be allowed. The NHL should implement a rule where a player must sign his entry-level deal with the team that drafted him and must play at least one season before being eligible to be traded. We'll skip the last part, but the first part. Offer sheets.
Offer sheets, yeah.
Should the Flames be interested in going down that road? I think the time has passed for this summer,
mm-hmm.
but as an offer sheet or getting into it, the conversation?
Holloway and Broberg were kind of the obvious ones this summer. Yeah, I would never rule it out. I do think that when you have the sort of cap space the Flames have, that you know, it leaves you open to take advantage of whatever sort of cap crunch another team might be in. I'm not sure the Flames, and I'd love to hear where you come from on this debate, buddy. I'm not sure the Flames are at a point where they've sort of identified the last few holes to fill. And that's where I see something like an offer sheet being really valuable, because you can get a guy mm-hmm. who can sort of fit into the age range that you're building around. Right now, let's be honest, the Calgary Flames at this stage of their overhaul need a little bit of everything. And I'm not sure that overpaying a young player to fill one hole makes a ton of sense just yet. But the fact they have gobs of cap space, the fact they have gobs of draft capital, it's certainly, you know, if there's a guy there that appeals to you, why not? It's certainly an option that they should be exploring.
Yeah, I do think that it is one of those. I think it absolutely is one of those areas that, you know, the Flames, if they identify a center iceman that they're like, hey, you know, we don't have this type of guy in the organization. We'd like to try to. I'm all for it.
Sure.
I don't know if Holloway. I know there's a lot of people who've been like, why wasn't Conroy on Holloway and Broberg? I don't know if now's the time for them to do it. But you know, and neither of those guys are center icemen. They've got plenty of wingers in the organization. They got plenty of D-men now in the organization. But the area that they are the thinnest at in terms of the future and trying to build to where they want to go is center ice.
Yeah.
And so if somebody all of a sudden is available in the next couple of summers that you're like, geez, there still isn't a contract signed, I'd have no problem with them doing that. And yeah, you know what? It does make one team angry at Craig Conroy. But you know what else? That is him using something that is fully within the rules. So I'd have no problem.
Yeah.
I still think minus the catastrophe that would have happened with Ryan O'Reilly had the Avalanche not matched, had that not been a part of it, the actual theory of offer sheeting Ryan O'Reilly, I had no problem with it. In fact, in hindsight, and pretending that the waiver thing didn't exist for a second, I kind of wish in hindsight the Flames would have gone, not wish because they would have lost the guy, but I think that they needed to go a little bit higher on that offer to dissuade Colorado from matching as quickly as they did.
This is way off topic, but I suppose not off topic because you just mentioned them. I remain adamant to this day. I don't think the NHL was going to let that waiver thing play out. I don't think.
So does, I think Jay Feaster will go to his end believing that
we'll never know
on appeal. We'll never know. The old Shermanator went in there and matched almost, I think they matched the same day.
It was an interesting day. I was at the rink in Colorado.
You were in Denver. I was at Shank South.
Okay, because the Flames were playing the Avalanche, and the tension was palpable that day at the arena.
To do it the night that you're playing the team.
But yeah, was it Kenny and Fort? Back to the question. I think it's definitely something that the Flames can keep up their sleeve. I like the way Pat put it, and I don't know if the powers that be at the Saddle Dome would be looking at it the exact same way, but I imagine they would be. Like, I don't think with Broberg and Holloway, they were at a point in their build that it makes sense. Like, you use that to fill one of the sort of remaining holes and not one of the many holes, if that's the right way to put it. And when I say many holes, I'm sort of referring to, okay, you know, is there a center or a winger?
Yep.
You know, what's Pospisil long-term in terms of where he might fit in a contending lineup? What is Jacob Peltier? There's just so many questions right now that I don't think this group is in the place that an offer sheet makes sense.
This one from Joseph in Calgary. Guys, where do we see Michael Backlund in all of this? Does he want to win or retire here? Is he here in April? So, Michael is starting the first of his two-year extension this season. I know. I've had enough conversations with Michael on and off the record. Michael did not sign back here and take on the captaincy with his eyes shut. He was very well aware of what might happen. And while there was a hope that last season was going to go better than the prior season, and while there was a hope that one or many of Chris Tanev, Noah Hanifin, Elias Lindholm, so on and so forth, decided to remain with the team, he was not naive to what might happen. And Craig Conroy was up front with him in terms of where this thing might go. And so Michael sat in the hot stove lounge with you and I just under a year ago,
right,
when he was named captain of the Calgary Flames. He sat there and talked about how he and his wife Frida weighed the pros and cons about, you know, chasing down an opportunity to win a cup or stay in the only place that he's known in his NHL career. And in the end, the pros of staying in Calgary outweighed the cons. And you know that heavy in that cons column was the potential eventuality of where the Flames are now. So I think Michael is committed to being the captain of this team. I think he understands where this team is going. And I think that he's committed to being a member of the Flames beyond the transition. I think Michael would like to finish his career with a year or two being the captain of the team as they start to move towards where they want to go. That's my feel on where number 11 is right now.
I agree with you, and I just wonder how ultimately the timing matches up. And I believe the question from the text line was, what does that mean for April? Is he still a Flame in April? I personally believe, yeah, absolutely. Michael Backlund, now, as you pointed out, in the first year of a two-year extension, he's a Flame in April. I wonder what it looks like. I guess that would be March of 2026 as we approach the deadline. I think Michael's best case scenario, or Michael's preferred scenario, is to be the captain of a team that is starting to come into contending status. And by contending status 2 years out, I'm sure I just mean fighting for a playoff spot again. But I hope Michael sees the progress, or I think Michael's hope is that the progress is such that he thinks maybe it's not super far-fetched to think I can play some more playoff games here. I can have that opportunity. I just don't know that that timeline matches up with what realistically we're looking at. And I wonder, past 1,000 games at that point, what it's going to look like. I wonder as if I'm starting a rumor, but I know there will be a conversation at that point, like, okay, Michael Backlund at 37, what's the right way to go here? I'd love to see him finish his career with the Flames. I think it's March, not this year, but the year after, that really becomes the topic of conversation.
This one from...
Is that fair, buddy?
I think that's fair, because things change. I mean, I think right now the way I phrased it is pretty accurate in terms of where Michael's headset is.
Yeah.
But things change. And who knows where it is, as you mentioned, a year from now or a year and a half from now, come March of 2026, when he is in potentially the final year of a contract.
The one thing I'll say about Michael Backlund, and it really doesn't need to be said, but this is a guy who keeps himself in such good condition. Yep. Like, I don't think we're talking about the end of this two-year contract and that's the finality of Michael Backlund's NHL run. I do expect there will be another contract. I see him as a guy who should probably, the way he looks after himself, the way he skates, the way he's sort of continued to get better with age, I see him as a guy who's probably going to play pretty close to 40. As I said, I'd love to see it all in one uniform, but I think it really depends on what the arc of the Flames is at that point.
This one from Matt in Bridalwood says, earlier in the week, I heard mention of a Giordano PTO with the Flames. It's been a while. Giordano PTO with the Flames. Looking for some clarity on this. Was this an official rumor or just hot air? Pat, what's your opinion on this? Does it make sense on any level? I think it's something that has been thrown around. Wes and I did a segment earlier this week on PTOs for the Flames, and so there was a question about whether or not they should go and think about doing that with Mark Giordano, who does not have a contract as it stands right now. But you and I are on the same page on that front. Do I think Mark Giordano can still play in this league? Yep. Do I think he should still play in this league? Absolutely. I just don't, and it's funny, this comes right after a Michael Backlund question. Only year two of Backlund being the captain of this team, and even on a PTO, bringing Gio back in, I don't think Mark Giordano at all is the type of guy that's going to come back and say, I'm the former captain, back, sit down. Not that at all, but he's still the former captain. Mm-hmm. He's one of the longer tenured captains in Flames history. There hasn't been that much time that has passed. I wonder about the potential distraction of that. So I think Gio should absolutely play this year in the league. I just don't know if Calgary is the spot that makes the most sense.
Yeah, and I'll just look at it from, you know, Craig Conroy and the brass at the Saddle Dome from their standpoint. If you do bring Mark Giordano in on a PTO at 40 years old, what's your reasoning? Like, why are you then keeping, whether it's a Jake Bean, let's say, out of the lineup, or why are you keeping an Ilya Solovyov out of the NHL, or what? You know, what's the trickle down and why are you doing it? And what does it, I suppose, mean to your build going forward? Like, what are you accomplishing by having Mark Giordano at this point in his career on your roster? And listen, if the answer is he's going to set a good example, he's going to be the hardest working guy, he's going to be one of those guys that hates to lose, okay, I can wrap my head around that. I just don't know with where the Flames are at and with the sort of glut of guys on the blue line that are either ready for an NHL look or sort of knocking at the door, I just don't see what sense it makes.
Yeah, I think that's also fair.
Now, one thing that I think is always really important to point out, we're talking, you know, here it is, end of August, we're talking PTOs. Every single agent is trying to get those guys a contract right now.
Yep.
Right? If you go back, I remember being on a sort of last thing before hockey season golf getaway with our pal Vix when they signed Eric Gabranson, right? That's a deal that got done sort of September 5th, September 10th. I don't remember exactly when it was, but those agents are always trying to get a one-year deal right now.
Yeah.
Before they take before a PTO. Before go PTO. Look.
Yeah.
And so I think we've seen a few guys commit to PTOs already, but I expect agents to really be trying to grind out that one-year deal for a couple more weeks.
Flames Talk mailbag underway. Steinberg West on this Friday. Here's Jimmy in Douglasdale at 960-960. Gentlemen, the Flames do not need any more vets or PTOs. They need to get rid of a vet or two to give young guys a chance. With all the vets they have, there's only two spots, maybe three, for the kids to fight for. If we're talking about trying to give the six or seven prospects a chance, Klapka, Schwint, Pelche, Dewar, Hanzek, Morton, Coronado, Stromgren, etc., they need to bottom out this year, at least picking in the top 10 so Montreal gets Florida's pick instead of Calgary's. It would be such a Flames thing to do to be 11th from the bottom and lose that pick. Two kind of things in there from Jimmy. First of all, last part, yes, it is, you never try to lose, but boy, losing your pick and not Florida's, considering the Panthers are the defending Stanley Cup champions and likely will have a pick, you know, closer to 30 than 10. Yeah, I think you'd much rather give up Florida's pick to Montreal than your own. And the only way that that happens is if Calgary's pick is in the top 10. It is then protected and automatically Florida's pick transfers to Montreal, going all the way back to the Monahan trade from a couple of summers ago. So that part, no question about it. As for the other part, Jimmy, I know what you're saying. As of right now, it looks like there's a glut, especially at forward, that's going to make it hard for multiple young forwards to crack the roster. But two things. Number one, I think if players, younger players, prove that they belong in the top 12 forwards or top six defense, they will be there. I fully believe Craig Conroy and Ryan Huska will go with the 12 best forwards on opening night. And if Matt Coronado is one of the 12 best forwards, or Jacob Pelche is one of the best forward, 12 best forwards, they'll be on the roster in the lineup, and they will, that at the expense of maybe a more veteran player. And the other thing to remember is this roster, I think, is going to be fluid, not only just because of injuries, but at some point, I think they're going to flip Kuzmenko. At some point, I think they're going to flip Mantha. And there are probably other names that enter into that conversation too, which, much like last year, will open up more spots as the season goes along.
Yeah, I think you sort of nailed what I assume the approach is, and that is you can move some of those veteran pieces if the up-and-comers sort of make a statement in training camp that, hey, you have to find a spot for me on this roster, right? If Cole Schwint looks like a guy in camp that needs to play games, Kevin Rooney can go on waivers. If Jacob Pelche looks like a guy who needs to play in the top nine, you can start looking at options for a Kuzmenko or whatever it might be. I think there's a real danger in going the other way. I think there's a real danger in coming into training camp and having a spot for Klapka sort of cemented, and we don't maybe know if he's an NHLer, having a spot cemented for Pelche. I think that's where a team can get in trouble, is when there's no competition there. And I know Jimmy's not suggesting, you know, just give the kids a yellow brick road to an NHL roster spot, but I think there has to be a happy medium. And, mm-hmm. and I do think it's easier to create a spot for a kid, even if that means something as simple as sitting one of your more veteran players. I think it's easier to do that than it is to suddenly go, oh, okay, geez, Adam Klapka's not ready. Cole Schwint's not ready. Who do we ice? Like, who's in our lineup tonight? I really think that's where a team can not get accustomed to losing, but that's where things start to get really bad.
This one from Jay, who says, where would you guys like to see the Flames finish next year? I have a two-pronged answer for you, Jay. One of two things. Either they shock everybody and make the playoffs, because that would be fun. It would be a good story. And it's always great to have playoff hockey in Calgary. It's awesome for what Wes and I do. It's awesome for fans. It's awesome for storylines. Or finish in the bottom 10. They can't be mushy middle. This year, maybe more than any other year in the franchise's history, they cannot be that dreaded mushy middle. They've either got to be in, which I think is going to be a very difficult task, or they've got to be a bottom 10 group. And I know that you can't really affect the latter, but boy, they can't be drafting 13 or 14 this year.
Yeah.
It's gotta be one or the other.
You know, this is not really going to be answering Jay's question, but I hope, because you and I are there for the games, we're there for the practices, we're constantly watching, I hope we get an entertaining and competitive team. I've said plenty of times, I think this group is going to take their lumps. I think a playoff spot would be borderline shocking. Could they finish towards, you know, the very bottom of the stands? They're in that mix of teams, especially if they don't get the goaltending they're hoping for, that could be sort of in that race to the bottom. And yet I just don't want to watch a team. And I say this selfishly as someone who's covering the team. I hope we're not watching a bunch of lopsided losses, because that makes it, listen, would it be great for the pick they'd get long term and you get the center? Yeah, sure. It's just not really the way I look at it. Selfishly, I want to cover an entertaining and competitive team.
John in Lethbridge says, Sam Morton, Cole Schwint, or Jacob Pelche most likely to play 40 or more games?
Morton, Pelche, or who is the... Schwint.
I think Pelche is my answer. As much as I don't know what Jacob is still, as much as I am not convinced, and this isn't me being skeptical either, but as much as I'm still not convinced that Jacob Pelche is a full-time NHLer, I still think he's the guy that's got the best chance of playing 40 or more.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I said this on the show yesterday. I do think he is a natural fit for that Coleman-Backlund line in the spot that Andrew Mangiapane has had off and on, but mostly on for a long time before being traded to Washington. And so I think that's the obvious answer. I do think all three guys mentioned, and I say this as a compliment to Sam Morton as much as anything, I think all three guys are going to play games this year. I'm Pelche's the only one I could see playing for.
Yeah. Colin in Woodbine. Pat, I've got a couple questions. First, Metallica on Sunday in Edmonton. Do I wear my Flames hat? Second, which prospect aside from Pelche is feeling the most pressure to perform in camp? Unanimous, yes. Absolutely wear the Flames hat at Metallica on Sunday, all day, every day, no questions asked. Number two, Coronado would be my answer on that one. Just because he really did some good things. I think last year, as much as it wouldn't be the way that Coronado drew it up with as much American League time as he saw, I think last year was a really valuable growth year for Matt, because he excelled in the American League, learned about being a professional hockey player, took some lumps at the NHL level, was healthy scratch, was moved up and down the lineup, got sent to the American League after a great training camp, so on and so forth. And he stuck with it, persevered, earned himself a recall again at the end of the season, and proved that he could improve during the season, prove that he was better at the NHL level in March and April than he was in October and November. And that, to me, all of those things are positives. And so now it's on him to build on that for year two playing pro hockey. So I would say he would be the one.
I think that's a good answer. The only thing for me that takes the pressure off of Matt Coronato a little bit going into training camp, which is, I believe, what Colin and Woodbine specified, he was the exhibition standout a year ago, and it didn't translate, right? We saw a guy come in and sort of light up the preseason. We remember the hat trick. The projections were kind of going through the roof. Could he score 20? Could he score 25? And before long, he was in the AHL. And I don't say that to criticize Matt Coronato as much as to point out that I think he has learned the lesson going into year two that what he does in exhibition season, you know, you can kind of toss out the window once you get to the middle of October and it starts to matter. I do expect he's a guy who's going to have a really strong fall again. I think he's going to carry that forward. For the sake of debate, I'm going to give you two other answers. I think Dustin Wolf is going to be feeling
that's a good one.
A ton of pressure as a prospect into this training camp because he has Devin Cooley in his rearview mirror, because he remains waiver exempt and can be sent to the minors, because he signed a deal that starts as a two-way this coming season. I think Dustin Wolf, who I know put a lot of pressure on himself at this time a year ago to go in and try and steal a job in camp, I think he is going to be feeling it. And the other one, and buddy, tell me if this doesn't count as a prospect anymore, but I still look at him in that light. I wonder where Daniil Miromanov fits. And by that, I just mean because of his offensive skill set, if he's not a top four guy, you know, can he play on your third pairing? If Cale MacLean wants to try the veterans in Uyghur and Anderson at the top of the power play, does that take more ice time away from Miromanov? And I just think now, coming into his first season with the Flames, obviously arrived in that Hanifin trade, that's another guy who's going to be feeling a little bit of pressure to say, hey, you got me for a reason. Here's what I can do.
I like all those. Hey, text line wide open. If you're listening live, it's a Friday mailbag on Flames Talk with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg. Thanks for being along with us on this Friday edition of Flames Talk. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Mailbag Friday rolls on. Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson, happy Friday. Let's just keep them rolling. 960-960. This one, no name on it, but I'll read it anyway. Why didn't the Flames try and re-sign Monahan this year? And I honestly don't know if they did or did not. I think it would have been a great story, but they weren't giving him the contract Columbus gave him. The Flames were giving 1 or 2 year deals out in unrestricted free agency. Monahan signed for 4 in Columbus with his boy Johnny pulling the strings behind the scenes.
Yeah,
they weren't going to get Monahan to come here for 1 or 2 years.
He signed for 5 in
5
Columbus.
Years in yeah. Columbus.
So 5 at 5.5 per.
Which, by the way, you want to talk about a career rehab? And not like any of it was ever his fault. It was all his body's fault. But, like, good for Sean.
Absolutely.
I feel so, like, there's not a guy that I can remember having that much of a feel-good turnaround from where he was as, like, a broken shell of a human near the end of his time in Calgary.
Sure.
Getting shut down to finish the 21-22 season, then getting traded that summer to Montreal. I remember the news conference, the Zoom call, when Monahan was introduced in Montreal. There were, like, 3 questions, and that was it. Monahan just put his head down, went to work in Montreal, had a great couple seasons there,
yeah.
Got himself a trade to Winnipeg, and then got himself a 5-year deal in free agency. So, you know what? The Flames may very well have been interested in popping a 1 or 2-year deal his way, But if you've got five on the table at 5.5 to go play with Johnny again, seems like a pretty pretty easy decision for him.
Yeah, there were certainly some rumblings toward the end of last season that the Flames might be interested in a reunion with Sean Monahan. TSN's Solomon Valji took the bait because he owes me beers. We bet on it. It never made sense. Especially 5 years. But I also, and you and I talked about it on the show, I was always hesitant to bring back a guy that you traded a first-round pick to send out in the first place. I'm not sure that's a reminder that you want in your locker room every day. I think Sean Monahan is the sort of proud veteran that every rebuilding team doesn't mind having. It's just Winnipeg wanted him back really badly. There were other teams in on that, and Johnny Gaudreau was dying to get him to Columbus. And so I'm not surprised where he ended up, but even if there was interest in Calgary, when they heard beyond 2 years, when they started to hear 3 or 4 or 5, no thanks.
This from Mark, who says, how many prospects will we see making their Flames debut this year, and who's got the best chance of doing so? So last year, just going off the top of my head, we saw Kuznetsov, Klapka. Who else made NHL debuts last year?
Zeri, Soloviev, Pospisil. I want to say I counted up the solo laps and it was 6 or 7.
That sounds about right.
Coronado and Wolf were at the tail end of the season before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we counted five-ish last year right there. And I think probably in that same range this year.
Yeah, when I heard the question from Mark, I just started scribbling. You know, William Stromgren, I think, has a good chance if he continues on his trajectory that he's on right now with the Wranglers. I think Sam Morton's got a good chance. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. Now, he's got to prove he can stay healthy. Wouldn't be the least bit surprised if we see Sam Honzek. Artem Grushnikov, I think, is a guy who could make his debut this coming season.
Zane Parekh, first-round pick of the Calgary Flames.
And I was going to say, one of Zane Parekh and Hunter Brustevich, from my standpoint, probably Brustevich, but from yours, Parekh?
Or both.
Who knows? We still don't know exactly where Matt Vigridden is going this coming season. And I don't expect he's a guy that's going to get an extended look, but I don't think he's sort of settled into his CHL destination, at least to my knowledge.
Yeah,
and so, yeah, if you set the over-under at 4.5 or 5.5, I think that'd be a pretty good line.
This from Kevin in Carstairs, wondering if Huska and the coaching staff are going to change their offensive and defensive styles because of the changes in the lineup. I'm not a fan of the amount of own zone time teams are getting in the Flame zone, and I believe it's the style of play. And one thing that Ryan Huska admitted, I think, to you and I when he sat down with us on locker cleanout day was he underestimated the amount of time it was going to take for the group to adjust and acclimate to a different brand of hockey, different style, different kind of systems in terms of the way they played. And I think that because of that, and because it felt like, you know, you talked to we have Kevin Woodley on once a week, and he talked at length this year about how Calgary's defensive metrics improved as the year went along. Because of that, I think they're probably going to stick with a lot of the things they implemented last year because they did start to get a little more used to it and comfortable with it in the back part of the season.
Well, and when you talk about spending less time in your own zone, and I hate to be the bearer of bad news for Kevin and Carstairs, but if you asked me at this point a year ago, okay, if you have the puck on someone's stick to break it out of your zone and you can pick any Flames defenseman, who is it? Well, it's Chris Tanev, right? He was their best puck mover. And not far behind him was Noah Hanifin, and even Oliver Shillington was, you know, that's a guy that you rely on to transport the puck out of his own zone. And so they've lost some really key guys that can help you break it out. I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but I think this is a group that is going to spend quite a bit of time in their own territory this season.
This says, at what point Are we asking Backlund to give up the C? The Leafs taught us something. Not yet. Yeah, not yet. We're into year two.
Who are you giving it to?
Weegar, Anderson, maybe, if we're talking about a long-term commitment there.
Yeah, I mean, if it becomes a, I don't want to say sticking point, but if it becomes a sort of part of negotiations with Rasmus Anderson in terms of staying beyond his current contract, which is up in 2 years, then maybe.
But in Toronto, it made sense for Austin Matthews to take the captaincy. It made sense for Craig Conroy to give up his C to give to Jerome Iginla, right? I don't know if we, with no disrespect to Weegar or anybody else on this team, there's not like that next franchise player knocking on the door that just makes sense to give the captaincy to.
Absolutely. I mean, if you ask, okay, well, whose team is this, right? The Maple Leafs, that's Austin Matthews' team. Whose team is this in Calgary right now? I don't even know what the answer is.
Yeah.
I might, my first blush, if you didn't tell me that it was related to the captaincy, and by that I just mean, if you said, hey, whose team is this? I think it's Nazem Kadri's team. But you're not taking the letter off Michael Backlund to give it to another guy in that mid-30s age range. And so if we get to the point in a couple years where you and I are sitting here saying, this is Connor Zary's team, or this is Rasmus Anderson's team, or this is Zane Parex, whatever that looks like, then I suppose you have that conversation. Mm-hmm. But I just think that's really premature.
Who would you say is untouchable for the Flames? Is there anyone? I think that they are starting to rebuild a group of untouchables. So I would say, as part of my untouchable group, it would still be small. I would right now have Dustin Wolf as part of it. I would have Zane Parekh as part of it. I would have Hunter Brustevich as part of it. Probably have Gridden as part of it as a first-round pick. Those would be the ones that I would put in my untouchable group right now.
Dustin Wolf remains an untouchable for me because I don't think he's proven himself at the NHL level to the point that his value to other teams surpasses or would be at all competitive with his value to your team. I don't think if you move Dustin Wolf that you'd be getting anything that would appropriately sum up what you think his potential could be. As for the other guys, I think the ones on your list, like, I'm not looking to trade Zane Parekh. I wouldn't be looking to trade Connor Zary. But, you know, we look at that trade that went down in the NHL just yesterday. Pittsburgh didn't want to get rid of Braden Jaeger, but had an opportunity to add a really good player. I that sort of trade makes me a little bit hesitant to call anyone an untouchable. Mm-hmm. But I think those young pieces that you've started to put together that you see as the future nucleus, you're certainly not looking to move them. Does that mean they're absolutely untouchable? I don't think so, but it would take a heck of an offer.
This one from Claude, who says, Pat and Wes, what's a benchmark measure of success for the Flames this season? Would it be fully executing team tank? So my measures of success will be, the first time in a long time, not statistically driven, not standings driven. My measures of success will be, how did certain young players progress? I want to see Connor Zary progress. I want to see Martin Pospisil progress, Matt Coronato, Dustin Wolf. I want to see players like that take steps, and I think that would be one measure of success for me. I think them continuing to be a hard-working, difficult-to-play-against team, even if not the most highly skilled team, continuing to build that identity under head coach Ryan Huska, that would be another measure of success for me. Like, if we're sitting here at the end of 82 games and saying, hey, yeah, they may have missed the playoffs, but boy, they worked hard for Huska again. That, to me, is a success. And then more decisions, more transactions made that affect the vision that Craig Conroy is putting in place here. So whether that's a Kuzmenko trade or a Mantha trade or a more established player, whatever the case may be, continuing down that road is the other. So there are three measures of success for me.
Showing, and this very much dovetails with what you just said, showing patience with the plan is perhaps the most significant measure for me. Just,
yeah,
you know, I don't care whether you surge out of the gates and you look like a better team than you're expected to be on paper. I don't care if you find yourself towards the bottom of the standings early on. I really think the Flames are going down a road that they've needed to go down for quite some time, or at least have put off with certain transactions. And so I think just sticking to that is the most important measure. And then you mentioned just the development of young players, and I'll give you sort of a twist on that answer, very much the same thing, but I need some answers on the young players. I need to know if Connor Zary is a center or a winger. I need to know where in a lineup a guy like Jacob Pelche or Matt Coronato might fit, so that I can start to plan for the future. Is Pelche, and I'll throw Pospisil in this mix too, are we talking about a top six guy? Are we talking about a checker? Are we talking about a pure energy guy? Like, what are we looking at there? I want some answers, and I know we're not going to get final answers on any of these, but I want some answers on what Dustin Wolf's future might look like. Is this a guy who's ready sooner than later to play a number one role? Those, if I can be closer at the end of the season to having the answer to some of those, I think that is as important as anything you're going to see in the standings.
Robin Reddeer says, two questions. This next season, will they win one game against the Oilers? Second, is there a Rasmus trade that makes sense to you? Well, last year, the last time the Flames visited Edmonton, that might have been the game of the year for the Flames. That might have been their best performance. They rolled in. They rolled over the Oilers that night. It was the last time. It was a February game. It was the last time I remember coming out of a game feeling like, damn, like there's some excitement around a Flames win. Shortly thereafter, Hanifin was traded. Shortly thereafter, Tanev was traded, so on and so forth. And Hanifin had a whale of a hockey game that night, too.
I remember that.
He was the best player on the ice.
That was sort of the storyline coming out of the game, wasn't it?
It sure was. Yeah. And that was the night that Coleman dumped McDavid, which was awesome. No,
I didn't know that was him. Okay.
I love Blake Coleman, the least convincing heel of all time, yet also had no problem doing it. I love it.
Yeah.
They got three games. I think they'll win. I think they'll beat the Oilers at least once. Is there a Rasmus Anderson trade that makes sense? I'm sure there is. There's not really any like real rumors going around or anything like that. But yes, there are trades that make sense for him. And I think if the Flames do end up going down that road, they'll get a nice return for him.
Because Rasmus Anderson has 2 years left on what is really a sweetheart deal, like a really low cap hit for the caliber of player he is, I think right now you're still trying for a Rasmus Anderson trade that doesn't make sense. And by that, I mean you're trying to get a competitor that wants him so bad that they're willing to overpay for 2 years of a guy who's locked in at, is it 4.55? Do I have that right?
Sounds right-ish.
Yeah. At a very reasonable cap. And
2 years left on a six-year extension.
I think right now, and I'm looking at this probably backwards to the way it's coming in on the text line, but right now you want someone to offer you a trade that doesn't make sense. You want to be blown away, because we talked about this on the show yesterday. There's so many reasons that I think it makes sense to keep Rasmus Anderson around going into next season.
Final question at 960-960. Great stuff on the text line, as always, on this Flames Talk mailbag. Finally, what does Cap Friendly say the Flames are at with their salary cap? Well, Cap Friendly says nothing. All it says is, sorry, we don't exist anymore. However, our friends at Puckpedia have the Flames at 19.9 on their salary cap right now. Only Anaheim at 21.7. has more space on their salary cap right now than the Flames do per our friends at Puckpedia, which means Craig Conroy and company have got some nice flexibility when it comes to some moves they can make over the next 8 to 10 months.
With not a lot of paperwork left to complete, right? Jacob Pelche is an RFA, needs a new deal. That'll chew up a sliver of cap space. You've got two guys also as RFAs still in Soloviov and Cole Schwint that I would expect to start this season in the minors. So the Flames theoretically go into the season with probably $19 million in cap space. That's a ton of flexibility to take on a bad contract, to make a deal, whatever that looks like.
Yep. Great stuff. As always, appreciate all of the input on a Flames Talk mailbag. Geez, we did one last week. Tons of response. Figured it's our final show before our final hiatus. We'll do it again. Tons of response. Always love it. Thank you so much. And we always like to incorporate the mailbag a few times a month just to make sure we're as interactive as possible. Great stuff on the text line as we start to wrap up this hour. Wes Gilbertson is on Twitter at W. Gilbertson, or is it Wes Gilbertson? It's Wes Gilbertson. W. Gilbertson's your email. He's on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson.
Jeez, Pat, don't give away my email.
At... he's at ICQ.com.
AOL. I'm right AOL. In on the ground floor on AOL.
That'll wrap us up this hour. Thanks to Shannon Cam, our producers. This hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Save 40% on a Halo smart lock and start unlocking your house right from your phone. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.